We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. Second episode of the week. I'm Joel Penfield, Josh Kaiser, and Jordan Foote joining me as always. And gentlemen, cheers, because we actually have baseball, real regular season baseball, in the end of the week. On Thursday, the Royals are going to be at Kauffman Stadium playing the Minnesota Twins. I am excited. I'm drinking some Holiday Soft Red Wheat Bourbon. Go buy some. Thank you to Holiday for everything they do for KCSN. And thank you to KCSC for everything they do for this show. Been a day one sponsor of this, and we can't thank them enough for their support. If you know a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train, go check them out. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Very good. Very excited. I'm just jacked up for baseball to be here. I think I've still got a little bit of adrenaline from talking to JJ Piccolo the other day. If you haven't watched that episode, one of my all-time moments of my life. So
that's pretty cool.
Shout that out. But yeah, just jacked up about baseball in general.
No, yeah, we can't thank JJ enough. That was 100%. Awesome.
Yeah. No, the Piccolo episode was great. He was fantastic. And, you know, he is infinitely busier than any of us could ever fathom being, okay. I think, even with day-to-day stuff. So, and the weird thing is, like, he has life, too. Like, he has a family. Like, I could balance, like, I don't have kids or anything, not married. I can't balance my own life right now as a 24-year-old that is not JJ Piccolo, not managing a baseball team. So it was awesome having him take some time out to chat with us.
The funny thing about that is scheduling is what you talked about. Is when I was doing research, I found out that like maybe in like 2016, right after the World Series run, he was doing the front office exec stuff. And he was also coaching like a youth team. Good grief.
Oh, my God.
I mean, so he was going straight from like the 9-to-5 day-to-day front office executive job into like coaching a youth baseball team. And he was like talking about how awesome of an experience that was, because like that's like a moment to clear his head from the normal. It was awesome to see that. But I was just blew my mind just to see like him throwing more baseball on top of baseball.
I need to be more efficient with my time, because like I just opened my health app on my iPhone, and so my sleeping habits used to be really, really, really bad. They're improving. So, well, technically, I guess they're not. I'll explain. Past 6 months, my average time in bed, according to Apple, 6 hours, 25 minutes, which that's somewhat respectable.
That's fine.
Yeah. The past month, it's 5 hours and 44 minutes. And the past week, it's 5 hours, 44 minutes. So I'm developing consistency, but eventually not getting even 6 hours is going to catch up. So
you can
listen, JJ.
Full games of baseball into your nightly routine. So figure
how many hours of sleep do you think JJ gets? We should have asked him that.
Oh, it's a good question.
Like 5, 6?
5 maybe. On a good day?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Probably. Oh, yeah. Man. I don't even want
We're 3 minutes in and no ball has been talked at all.
No ball has been talked, but you know, we got about 6 months to do that, so I'm sure people are like, yeah, we got to figure something else out too. And I understand. But no, packed episode today. We're going to talk about nothing has been officially announced, but we basically know what the opening day roster is going to be based on the minor league assignments that were placed after the second exhibition game, the last tune-up game in Texas today. We're going to do some, like our version of like a preseason awards and predictions for the Royal season, and then we're going to do it for the MLB at large at the end. Just even though we love talking about the Royals, and that's great, we love baseball as a whole. and we have, you know, interest in other teams outside and players outside of that. So we'll do our awards picks for MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Cy Young in each league, Division Winner in each league, and then pick the World Series. I was horrifically wrong last year, and that's fine. I expect to be most of the time. So it's fun. I think I picked the Twins to be in last place last year, so that went really well for
me. Brother.
Yeah.
I think I had some, like, I'm going to go back and like look whenever we hit to a commercial break, because I need to see how bad it was last year, because I think I had some ones that were wrong. All right, guys, let's get into it now. As I mentioned, essentially the opening day roster has been set. We haven't gotten the official like graphic on social media, but like I said, with the minor league assignments that were made, the options that were made, we essentially know the 26-man roster. So I'll go through now. So infielders, then your bench guys there, it's Salvador Perez, Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Massey, Bobby Wood Jr., Hunter Dozier, Matt Duffy making the roster as a non-roster invitee, and Nicky Lopez, your outfielders, MJ Melendez, Kyle Isbell, Edward Olivares, Nate Eaton, Frondo Reyes, and Jackie Bradley Jr. as non-roster invitees that are going to make the opening day roster. Your starting rotation, most likely Zach Greinke, Brady Singer, Jordan Lyles, Brad Keller, and Chris Bubich. Your bullpen, Scott Barlow, Aroldis Chapman, Ryan Yarbrough, Amir Garrett, Dylan Coleman, Taylor Clark, Jose Kwas, who got that last spot over Colin Snyder, Carlos Hernandez, and then the guys that didn't make it, Josh Salmon, Freddie Freeman, Richard Lovelady, and Josh Taylor. We talked about some of that with JJ Piccolo. Be sure to go and check that out. Well, we're going to see all of those guys in the big leagues at some point, but the opening day roster is set. Were there any surprises to you guys of guys that did make it, didn't make it? We talked about some of the guys that didn't make it, but what are your overall thoughts on and what the Royals are rolling out there with on Thursday?
I think not necessarily in terms of surprises, but it was interesting to hear JJ talk about Jackie Bradley Jr. and how he's a guy obviously aging, not what he used to be, et cetera, not to, you know, kick a guy while he's theoretically down in terms of numbers, whatever. Having him come in and like completely understand the role, understand nothing was guaranteed for him, and that, hey, yeah, you're coming in, these things do have a way of working themselves out in terms of injuries and spots and at-bats and stuff like that. It's just, I don't think weird is the right word, but interesting to see him on that opening day roster. It makes complete sense, but if you would have said that 4 or 5 years ago, like, hey, Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to be the Royals, you know, one of their outfielders in 2023, I'd be like, that's, you know, incredibly odd. Now the pieces fit together. I think they're the infield picture. The other storyline, I guess, is Matt Duffy making it, and a guy that coming into the spring, not a lot of people had necessarily doing it, or they were hoping that it wouldn't happen. I know someone who was like that.
Talk about that. But
JBJ is interesting. Matt Duffy's interesting. That's almost all I have in terms of guys that did end up making it.
And those were cool. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. in general, just like popping in, like maybe 2 weeks in and being like, all right, guys, I'm here to hit and field balls. And he did exactly that in spring training. Had one of the higher opponent quality scores, according to BREF, on the team is a 7.8. And that's equivalent of just around the AAA pitcher that he's facing. But I only saw a handful of games maybe, and Jackie Bradley Jr. was in the field, maybe one or two of them. And every time I saw him out in center field, the word effortless came coming up whenever I'd see him running out there. So the fact that they can add a very athletic center fielder with a good clubhouse presence from according to JJ, just willing to do whatever he needs to do for the team is huge in and of itself. But I guess the surprises we kind of mentioned, the Staumont, Fermin, Lovely, and Josh Taylor were all kind of surprises, maybe some a little bit more than the others. Josh Staumont absolutely shocked me, to be completely honest with you. I kind of had him as a lock, and I think a lot of people did. So I'm glad we kind of talked to JJ about that, about what they were wanting to see more from him. And I am very interested, like I said, in that split finger that he's working on. So if he's throwing strikes, he's already got nasty stuff, and he's able to mix in that split finger. I think he's going to be up very, very soon. So I'm pumped to see Josh Staumont's new report, but gotta wait for it, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway is that they decided not to carry a third catcher and Freddie Fermin on the roster. I think they just want him to get probably more regular at bats, completely understandable, allow MJ to still catch every once in a while.
I imagine they're going to end up moving him out there full time, but hey, maybe some work with Paul Hoover has changed some things. He's been able to figure it out, and he could be that effective backup catcher and still play the outfield 3 or 4 days a week as well as, you know, DH and get him off his legs. So that was one of my biggest takeaways. The JBJ one makes a ton of sense with Drew Waters out. You having that veteran outfielder out there with a bunch of young outfielders, it makes a ton of sense. Or outfielders that are just straight up not good defenders, like Franmil Reyes and Everett Olivares. Like, I totally get it. Having that guy that, you know, he's going to start maybe once or twice a week, be a defensive replacement for Franmil or Edward in the late game, I understand it. My only hangup is Matt Duffy. And it's nothing against Matt Duffy, but it's just I would rather the Royals lose games and get the experience for Nate Eaton to third base and Michael Garcia in the, you know, they're out there every day. Now, the caveat to that is it makes more sense now that they want to get Michael down in AAA with consistent at-bats and allow him to play center field. The counter to that is you could put Michael Garcia on the opening day roster. You still have Jackie Bradley Jr., who's been one of the best defenders in baseball forever. There's a perfect mentor right there that he can get big league time, which I think he's proven he can be a legitimate big league bat. Even if you want to put him out there once a week or late in games just to give him some time, he's out there with Jackie Bradley Jr., and that's a perfect mentor for him. But we'll see how it all plays out. I don't expect JBJ to be here for very long, and I think he understands that. But credit to him for coming in and fully buying in and go, okay, I'm cool with being here. I understand my role. Like, there is something to be said for that, and having that kind of leadership in the clubhouse is super important. And so, talking about the mentor aspect with JBJ, that's a perfect mentor for Kyle Isbell too, as he learns to play center field full time. Now, Isbell has looked great out there. I think he's going to be even better having JBJ, having some of that tutelage there. Big time.
Yeah, and I think one of the main saving graces for people who are upset that this guy didn't make it, or frustrated that this guy did make it, or think, you know, this guy's falling for this guy or isn't falling for the other guy. The Royals have really stressed throughout the offseason that they want to have as much flexibility as they can in the bullpen, in the rotation, in the starting lineup, as much versatility as they can with some guys, a good blend of youth and athleticism and depth and veteran presence and age. They want to be more matchup specific moving forward in terms of series or weeks, or maybe the 2 week stretch here. They want to be more proactive in regards to injuries and more cautious with some guys. It seems like you're going to see guys that didn't end up making it for pretty decent stretches of time. I think, and just because someone made it now does not mean that their leash isn't relatively short. Like, I think the Royals are not a team that, oh, they can't afford to mess around a little bit because they're going to be in the thick of the, you know, top of the AL this season. Like, they can afford to have some margin of error, but they're kind of acting, at least they seem to be, as if they want to learn as much about as many players as possible this year. And I think that's probably the right way to do it.
100%.
It's a good blend of getting the young guys in there while also not putting a ton of pressure on them. And to a certain degree, there are certain times where there are veterans in there to kind of give those young guys a kick out of, hey, it's time to go. It's sink or swim time. Like, we can't be messing around. Like, there's a certain point where, you know, I think we see more with the pitching staff where it's, hey, this is year three, year four for some of you guys. Like, we got to get things going. We can't keep doing this. We can't keep letting you have experience and let you take your lumps. Like, we got to win. We got to start winning.
I don't know. Part of that.
Anything else?
Yeah, I think that was, and the pitching staff kind of worked itself out as far as the rotation goes with Daniel Lynch's injury. It was kind of like, well, it's Bubich and it's his job now. So, and he's looked good in the last, like, week or so as he's kind of building up, getting up. I don't know, you get up to 60 pitches yesterday. Is that what it was? Maybe not that many.
Four innings.
Okay. That sounds right. Four innings, six Ks, I think, is what it was, too. And I was looking at some of his numbers from StatCast today, and they looked good. I mean, he's got a new slider. He was throwing his second most pitch that he's threw yesterday, so he was clearly still, you know, trying to work it out, trying to see how much he can rely on it. So, I'm pumped to see how that kind of develops throughout the season. But the pitching staff, in large part, all those signings that people seem to be very cold about, let's say cold, those average starting pitchers, they are needed. They were needed right out of the gate. Because if we started this needing, you know, meaningful innings from Jonathan Heasley right now, that would be a problem. If we were needing meaningful innings from Jackson Kowar, from Carlos Hernandez. That would be a problem with Lynch, with Zerpa. Big injuries and just lack of production in spring training, and a lot of questions on a lot of those guys still needing to be answered. It's a good thing that Jordan Lyles, that Zach Greinke, and probably a little bit of Ryan Yarbrough on top of that as well. So it's a good thing they're here. Whether they're the right guys is definitely up for debate, but it is no fault of the front office to actually added starting pitching, even though they still needed to get plenty of eyes on what they're doing.
Yeah, we are going to do some of our preseason predictions and awards for the Royals coming up right after this break.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
We back.
Oh, yeah. All right. So let's just come hot right out the gate here and doing some of these preseason awards. Josh, we'll start with you. Who is your preseason Royals MVP?
It is Hunter Dozier. No, it's not Hunter Dozier. I'm going with the obvious one, Bobby Witt Jr. It's going to be super easy for him to rack up WAR as the shortstop on this team. And if he's going to take these step forwards to a potential all-star, maybe an MVP sprinkled into there, he's going to start taking steps forward in production. I want to see him walk more. I want to see him strike out less. I want to see more extra base hits. I want to see him doing everything that they've been saying that he is capable of doing. I wanted to see it at the World Baseball Classic. Lord knows we need to get all those plate appearances for Jeff McNeil, though. I think it's Bobby Witt Jr. racking up that WAR on that shortstop and the high value shortstop position. So ready to see it. Bobby Witt Jr. is my team MVP.
Yeah, I've got Bobby Witt Jr. too. I don't have a ton to add to that. I think you're going to see like a passing of the torch, if you will, from like, and obviously as long as Salvador Perez is on the team, he's going to be like a face of the franchise. But like, I think you could see if Bobby Witt Jr. has a big enough year, when you think of Royals baseball, still going to think of Salvador Perez, but a lot more people are going to think of Bobby Witt Jr. So I think he's going to be the team MVP this year. It just makes a ton of sense. He had objectively a good rookie year. Now, compared to the hype, you can get into that. You can nitpick if you want. We've talked with Peter Apple about that, and that he had a good rookie year, and he was a good player last season. I think he's going to be a good to great player this year, and he's going to have that leap where he's making better swing decisions. He is striking out a fair amount, which hasn't really been a problem. I think Bobby Witt Jr., man, he's going to have a really good year, and he's going to be the team MVP.
Did you guys see the mic'd up portion of him in the World Baseball Classic?
Mm-hmm.
I did not. So everybody was talking about him being a great hype man. And I was like, well, I didn't see a lot of that last year in the dugout. He seemed like a very new, like green, wet behind the ears, just soaking it all in, trying to learn everything he can, which is exactly what he needed to be. But in the World Baseball Classic, he was absolutely leaning into that role of being like the mouth, being the hype man, being the energy in the group. I love that. It just shows me that he's embracing the face of this franchise. I love that you said it was a passing of the torch. That's exactly what I see here. But I was just very encouraged to see him kind of embracing whatever role he had. He's going to be the energy guy. And if he's going to be the new face of this franchise, cornerstone of this roster, I'm ready to see it.
I think that's a really good point. I can't argue against Bobby being that guy, but just to go in a different direction so we're not just all picking the same guy. I'm going to go Brady Singer. This team is going to go as far as Brady Singer goes and how far this pitching staff can take them. So I thought about cheating and just saying that the team MVP is going to be Brian Sweeney, but I knew you guys would have booed me for that. But he's a proxy to this. Like he has to be a huge part of this. But the Royals need an ace. Like it's cool that and nostalgic that Zach Greinke is getting the opening day start. And if Brady Singer was a little more built out, then I think he would have been if he wasn't gone to the WBC. But this team, like he is as close to this team's one as there's going to be on this pitching staff. Mm. So if the team is going to take that next step forward like we think they can, even if it's a small step, it's going to be because Brady Singer is able to replicate or be even better than he was last season.
100% agree. And I may have some more points on Brady Singer here in just two shakes of lamb tail.
Yeah. Well, let's just go right to that. Yeah. But your preseason award for best pitcher, Josh, what do you think?
Brady freaking Singer. Just absolute. I mean, he's got the best projection, which makes sense. He's absolutely striking dudes out. I love that he's added more of this changeup into the mix. I want to see more some StatCast numbers on to see of just how much he's using it and how filthy it is. Seems like it's absolutely doing the trick, but it seemed like he had it last year a little bit and just kind of didn't use it very much, left it on the shelf quite a bit. He has two other good pitches, so I totally understand that. But I am ready to see Brady Singer step into that next role and if you take that next step forward and be the anchor of this team. So give me Brady Singer as this team's MVP, best pitcher. Let's call it that.
Yeah, you could have, if you would have asked me my thoughts on Brady Singer, I would have copy and pasted what Josh just said verbally. So I think he's going to have a really good year. I think he had a really good chunk of last season. Like I expect him to build on that, and he's not going to be perfect. He doesn't need to be perfect for the Royals' purposes. He just needs to be good, and I think he can definitely be good. He might even be able to be better than that this season. He's not going to get Cy Young votes, I don't think, or anything crazy like that, but can he have a really good year for the Royals, and can the Royals' success be, can he be a pretty good reason why? I think he can. Can he be the best pitcher on the staff? I think he can, whether that's bullpen or rotation, possibly. Brady Singer can lead the way. And like Joel said, that could make him the team MVP. Like it's not crazy to take that leap of faith. It's really just kind of a jump down the whatever, something that you jump off of that's not that high. A step, I guess. I was like, you're not jumping off a mountain or anything because you obviously wouldn't be alive anymore, but jumping off of... Joel, just help me out here. Take it away.
So Brady Singer is easily going to be that, but I just for the sake of not agreeing, and I think I'm going to go with Brady Singer, but just to give somebody else some talking here, I think Brad Keller has a chance to probably be second, maybe third best pitcher on this team. This version of Brad Keller that we've seen this spring is the best version that we've seen probably since his kind of breakout campaign. I think it was 18 or 19 his rookie year. Like what we're seeing right now, he looks confident. He's mixing his pitches better. It's not just slider, 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 slider and praying. Like the curveball he's added, he's riding his fastball at the top of the zone. It's very clear that the plan that Brian Sweeney and Zach Bove have for him is working and has an impact early. And if he's able to be, 50% better than he was last season, we're looking at a really solid arm in this, and he's not asked to be the best pitcher in the rotation like he was the last 2 years. He needs to be the third, and maybe that's how you get the best version of him because it takes some of the pressure off. And he's in a contract year. Guys tend to, the contract year is undefeated. He's trying to play for his big league career and not just play on 1 year deals, or a non-roster invite situation. If he has a good year this year, he can find himself on a big league rotation next year somewhere else, or Maybe it's good enough that the Royals feel like they can re-sign him. But Brad Keller feels like someone that could play himself nicely here if he has a good year.
I like that.
For spring training, he was 28.4% K rate with a 6.8% walk rate.
That'll play. That's great.
That is even remotely him. He's absolutely on this as a valuable asset on this rotation. Maybe a two. Who knows?
Yeah,
100%.
Acknowledges because clearly that did not work well last time. So
you tried your best, Coward, and you fell on your face.
Yeah. Well, and he does too. You know, everybody does.
And everyone saw. You know, do one too many divorce analogies, and you just kind of they fall flat every once in a while.
Yeah, I'll stay away from those.
As long as you're not Chris Mad Dog Russo, I think we'll be fine.
Let's not.
We can talk off air about Mad Dog.
He is banned from ever being mentioned on this. Like, number one rule of the One Royal Way podcast.
Redacted.
Talk about Chris Russo.
Redacted is being discussed off air.
Redacted, yeah.
He never gets to come on the show. I was like, I don't think we have to worry about that.
Don't think we have to worry about that one. Who do you guys have for the preseason award for best hitter?
It's Vinny Pasquantino. I'd be surprised if anyone else had anything else. I'm not even going to say too much about him. He's the best pure hitter on the team. Witt is going to be a better player overall than him just because of the stuff he can do that isn't just hitting at the plate. He has the speed and defense. Pasquantino, he could be an average defender. He could be an objectively poor base runner. It doesn't matter. He is the best hitter on the team. He's going to be the best hitter on the team. He doesn't even have to hit for a ton of power. He doesn't need 30 home runs to be the best hitter on this team. I don't think there's really a case to be made for anybody else barring Bobby Witt Jr. just going absolutely nuclear at the plate. Even then, like, the best pure hitter, probably Vinny Pasquantino.
I was thinking Bobby just because I think he has a chance to go, like, 30 homer, 30 doubles. 30 plus, like, that kind of season you could go with best hitter. Even if he hits, like, 265.
Sure.
Like that it could be something like that, whereas just the damage that he did in totality, probably, you know, you could mark it as a better season. Even if Vinny hits 320, which wouldn't shock me with like 18 home runs, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I'm with you. Vinny P is on mine. I think there could be a case with other guys, and I might talk about him in just a second as well, but Salvi Perez is the second highest WRC plus in the Zips DC projections of 124, Vinny at 132. I think that's pretty high and lofty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty lofty for Salvi. I mean, that's hitting him hitting 267. I don't know if he's a 267 guy, but he did in the World Baseball Classic nails. So he was absolutely a monster. If he is World Baseball Classic version of Salvador Perez, then it's going to be Salvador Perez.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
That's totally fair. Like, I don't think we're going to see – I think the 2021 Salvador Perez was awesome. I don't think we're ever going to see a 48 homer Salvi, but could we see 30 homer in Salvi again? Absolutely.
No.
And if he stays healthy this year, we're able to get him off his feet by July. Yeah. I think Freddie Fermin ends up on the roster by then. You can DH him more and let him catch three times a week, three, four. And if Fermin's bats up to snuff, then you have a great opportunity there. I think DH Salvi may be some of his best offensive seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, like it's kind of the same way I look at, like, this is a different conversation, but I was talking about with some buddies about Mike Trout and some of the back stuff. I'm like, when he goes to full-time DH in about 3 years, we might see the best offensive seasons for Mike Trout because he's not roaming the outfield anymore, and he can just focus on
it. People take for granted, like, when you're not actively running these guys into the ground, I don't care if they're getting older and their, you know, reaction time may be a little bit slower. You're going to counteract that by not actively running them into the ground and getting them injured and making them play defense. And it's going to have a tangible impact, I think, with Salvador Perez in that he's going to play. He can sustain whatever he does this year, I think, for a few years if he was DHing, even at age 35, 36. Like, I don't think he's going to be this, like, all-world hitter or anything, but can he be an above-average hitter well into the tail end of his career? I think he can, because he's not going to be catching 100 times a year, 120 times a year, even 80 times a year at that point. He might just be DHing. That's going to help the Royals a lot, and I think it's going to help him a lot too.
I think that perfectly transitions into my made-up award that we were going to do. Anybody else got one? I got a perfect transition.
Okay. I want to hear
it. So I tweeted about this, but made up spring team MVP is MJ Melendez, because I combined what he did in spring training and what he did in the World Baseball Classic, slash 273, 353, and 614 for a 967 OPS, 27.5 K rate, pretty high, but still a 12% walk rate. That's a 7.6 opponent quality score. And then it's also, he was in that gnarly Pool D with the Dominicans, with Puerto Rico, with missing one. Is it Venezuela? Maybe. Yeah, I think it's Venezuela. But it was just a gnarly pitching matchups that he saw every day, still slashed really, really well. And like as you were talking about that, it makes more sense to what not only is his contribution in at the plate really, really good, but also he's pretty solid there in the field. And if he can get, you know, keep Salvi rested to where he is healthy all year and still able to contribute at the plate like that, that's also bringing value for MJ Melendez. So at this point, I think MJ Melendez could be the team MVP of spring, but also his contributions, if he is anywhere near that again, he's going to be huge. So I think we're going to be talking about, I think Jeff Passan, they actually had him on his like breakout list. So keep an eye on MJ Melendez.
Before we do team, like our record prediction for the season, does anybody have a made up award? Something funny?
That's something. So, no, whatever. What am I trying to say? Peek behind the curtain. We've lost Joel temporarily. Like, he kind of like sat back and the video will show it, but like, I guess he was frozen and then conked out of the broadcast. So Josh's made up award was like spring MVP.
Yep.
So we are one award in. I didn't make any, which is okay. So Joel, if you have any made up awards, then this is the time for all those.
Okay, so my made-up award is the Peter Griffin and the Chicken Award, which is going to go to Amir Garrett whenever he gets to face Javi Baez this year.
Dude, did you see how good Amir Garrett was this spring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was by far the best pitcher in this staff. He did not allow an earned run in, was seven innings? Strike it down.
I think he's going to be, like, if he's deployed properly and isn't a high-leverage situation every time guy, and as a situational for an inning and a third or just two thirds, go get a couple lefties, then I think he is a valuable, valuable piece of this bullpen. I just need to see him face Javi Baez once. We came so close last year, but I need it to happen.
Uh-huh. 23 batters face it, a 0.57 whip and a 6K to walk ratio. That plays
six.
That plays.
Okay, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but his delivery looked a lot, like his arm action looked a lot shorter. Like he worked on that this off, because he always was kind of that long, lanky, kind of like arm, you know, whippier arm action guy. It looked like he was kind of shortening up right to about here and just letting it go. So hey, maybe that helps with some of the control stuff that he had last season early on. Anything will be better for the most part. He was rough there for a little while. And I think that was because they were trying to make him like the setup guy or the closer like he was in Cincinnati, which is just not who he is at this point in his career. So making him just a situational guy, and then you still have Coleman, Barlow, and Chapman in the back end. Like, you still have really solid guys that can go and get those last three outs.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could have a very nice year in the bullpen.
Yep.
Okay.
This is last year control for him, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Moment of truth. We've been, I think, relatively optimistic about what this team can be, understanding that they are not going to be spectacular this year. But Jordan, we'll start with you. What is your prediction for the Royals' record this season?
I think they're going to win 9 more games than last season. Now, you can do the math. That's 74 and 88. That doesn't sound very good. But you think 9-game improvement. I think the improved buy-in gets them to the 70-win mark, just enjoying going to work every day. I've talked about that. The active buy-in from people is going to account for a lot, and I think the internal improvement determines what else they get. Now, if you get 4 wins of internal improvement from your guys, I don't know if that's necessarily what they're aiming for, what everyone else is aiming for. Maybe there is some – dead weight is not the way to put it. Maybe there are some players that hold them back a little bit in terms of performance to get a little bit more playing time. Like, I think – the leashes for those players are going to be shorter. The depth is improved. The rotation, barring injury, looks like it has the right, like the Jordan Lyles signing, the stuff that people took for granted and said was a bad move. Like Josh said, they're ending up needing stuff like that. So I'm going to go 74 and 88. I mean it in the nicest way possible. I think they're going to be a bad team again, but I do think they're going to be competitive at times. I do think they're going to be fun to watch for people, and I do think that they're going to feel better at the end of the year about the season they had.
I am a little more optimistic. I have them at 79-83. I think that they are a year behind the Baltimore Orioles lockstep. Last year, the Orioles were 83-79 fraudulently. Their Pythagorean win-loss record was 79-83, and I had them pegged to 79 before I picked it, and then I went and found their actual research to actually confirm my bias. And so I'm using facts for very subjective predictions.
But I think it's your narrative.
That's right, 100%. I am not denying that at all. But I'm going to go 79-83. We're going to take a big, massive leap forward. Yes, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid after I said I was not going to do it. But here we are. And time is a flat circle.
All facts, yeah, by the way.
I totally knew that Josh was going to go something close to 80. I was like, oh, God, please don't do it. And then
I had to talk myself.
And he did.
I had to talk myself out of 500, boys.
You know, yeah, I'm not going to go that far. I'm right around where Jordan is. I think 75-87 feels about right. I think a legitimate 10-win improvement. And we're going to see how much this coaching staff, a coaching staff impacts winning very quickly from a bad one last year to what seems like at least a good one in terms of process. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, first-time manager, there's going to be growing pains. First-time true pitching coach, there's going to be some growing pains, but I think they at least have the right mentality, the right process, and the right combination of using the analytics and the human feel and the relationship building that Quatrera has been able to do with the players. Players seem bought in, the vibes. Like, I know people hate, you know, the analytics community, people hate vibes. Vibes, I think, yeah, it does matter. Jordan said, going to work every day and not feeling like you need to be quiet and tense in the locker room kind of matters. Like, you've seen guys be more excited, and I think having guys like Bobby and Salvi and Vinny and Nikki go and Brady go and play in the WBC, bring some of that joy and, you know, that environment to the clubhouse from day one, seeing what that looks like, that's huge. And we could see that play a factor very early. So I think a 10-win improvement isn't out of the realm of possibility. I don't think it's crazy to see that could happen. And I think that's a solid year considering the step back they took last year. I thought they were going to win 75, 77 last year, and they won 65. I think they can win, even if they win, I think 72, if they have to win over 70 games. And I think if they win 72, I'm not going to be upset. But if they win 68, I'm going to be a little concerned about what the timeline actually is compared to what we think it should be. So there's something to think about there.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All right, we are going to take our last break. We're going to come back and do some season predictions for Major League Baseball as a whole. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
We back again.
Let's go.
For the record, for people listening, just because I sound like a doofus, I only say this twice because this break is very short, and I wanted to, like, Joel was on his phone looking up some statistics, I think, so I wanted to make sure that we hit right at the back of the break. That is the only reason I sounded like a doofus twice being this back in this podcast.
No,
it is not going to be
fair.
I was using that
short little break just to check scores on a couple.
15 seconds goes by fast, man.
It does. It really does. That's why I like that little KCSC video that we had last year. Because that was like 30 or 45 seconds, and it was perfect to, like, check a couple things and then lock back in.
Mm-hmm. I just get down and do a bunch of push-ups because you see how jacked my body is, can't you tell?
There we go. All right, guys. So let's run through it this way. Let's do all of the awards first, like go around that way, and then we'll do division winners going around, and then World Series. Sound good?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. I'll go first on the prediction, the awards here. AL MVP, I have Shohei. It's low hanging fruit, but it's too easy. Like, it's a contract year. He's the best player in the sport. I'm just going to go with it. Cy Young, Luis Castillo from the Seattle Mariners. rookie of the year, Hunter Brown, pitcher for the Houston Astros. That one, I know that Anthony Volpe, Gunnar Henderson are really sexy picks there, but I'm going a little off the beaten path. I just say, like, what Hunter Brown did last year, he's basically a young Verlander clone. He's going to be a stud in that rotation immediately. NL MVP, I'm going with Freddie Freeman. NL Cy Young, Zach Wheeler. And NL Rookie of the Year, Jordan Walker for the St. Louis Cardinals. Made the opening day roster. He's a absolute stud. I think he could run away with it, honestly.
His projections weren't that great. I was kind of surprised by...
you have to take into account with some of these, with Steamer and Zips, is they're generally, like, conservative estimates.
Yeah.
So what I always think, like, if I saw that 96 or something, WRC plus, I'm like, if he gets up around, like, 115, 120, he's going to be...
Yeah, I was going to say, if he gets, like, 10% better than that or even...
Yeah.
That's...
Like, I don't necessarily add 10% for everybody, but I look at it and I go, okay, if that's what the conservative estimate is, if he hits, like, the way that people think he can, and he hits for power the way that people think he can, he could run away with that.
Well, what if Vinny Pasquantino's is a conservative estimate?
Which is nuts, right?
That'd be ridiculous. Salvador Perez is a conservative estimate.
North of 150.
Yeah, granted, you know, guys like that are different than guys coming into the league in their very first season with,
right,
I don't want to say less proven profiles than Vinny because he wasn't like a top prospect, but like people in Kansas City knew he could hit before he got the national hype of being able to hit, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Please. Josh, I want your awards first, if that's okay.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. So when I was going through, I didn't pick any of the favorites. I just wanted to deviate a little bit from it because very rarely are the favorites ever the ones that actually win it. So I'm going AL MVP, Vlad Guerrero Jr., kind of a little precursor of who I think wins the AL East. We'll get that later.
Like that.
AL Cy Young, also off the beaten path, Shane McClanahan. I'm in on him, projected ninth highest pitcher in the AL in WAR. It's going to be a long shot, but I really, really like his stuff. Rookie of the Year, I got Masataka Yoshida, 29-year-old, kind of a bit of a loophole, still a rookie season, but he's projected to have 137 WRC plus in Boston as a 29-year-old. If he's putting up those numbers, it's going to be tough to be able to compete with that. So, those
are what Yoshida did in the WBC as a preview, he could be a stud early. Now, the Red Sox are going to be bad, but he could be good.
Could be, yep. But I mean, it just seems like that market. If a Red Sox is a good, they're gonna mark the shit out of him. I think that's a slam dunk if he's even anywhere close to that 137. So, NL side, I got Ronald Acuna Jr. as my NL MVP. I think there's potential for maybe a 40 plus season. So give me that.
If he goes 40-40, then that's a slam dunk.
See, here's the thing. I looked this up. There's been 4 40-40 seasons. The only one of those four to actually win MVP was Jose Canseco.
The only one?
Only one of them. Yep.
Because A-Rod went 40-40, but
A-Rod.
He did it like in the late 90s when Bonds and McGuire and Sosa were doing
it. Bonds has another one of them. The other one is the last one to do it in 2006 was Alfonso Soriano. Loved Alfonso Soriano.
Oh, that dude was so good. He was so underrated.
Yeah. And he was like ninth in MVP votes, it was way down low. So it's crazy. So I think if a 40-40 season happens now, and he's the only person that beats that is Aaron Judge's last year season or Shohei Ohtani just going bonkers.
Yeah.
I think that's touching a 40-40. NL Cy Young, Corbin Burns. I love me some Burnsies, projected to lead the NL in WAR, and he somehow has the second best odds to win the NL Cy Young. So give me Burnsy for that NL Cy Young. NL Rookie of the Year, got Corbin Carroll for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Got great power combo. Could absolutely go 2020 with good
He might steal 60 bags.
He could, yep. And I was surprised by how many home runs he hit last year for both in AAA and the major league stint he got. So I think Corbin Carroll is almost a slam dunk if Jordan Walker is not living up to his potential. I think Corbin Carroll is right there on his heels. So that's where I got him.
I need to preface mine with a couple of things. I know I'm already off to a bad start.
Love
I have my pick, and then I have a player to watch for every pick. And I use DraftKings odds to factor in my player to watch, whether I actually think they're a player to watch or not. My pick is actually my pick, even though I have the odds for them as well. So with that said, I have Shohei Ohtani winning the AL MVP. I have Shane McClanahan winning AL Cy Young.
I want
he's a plus 1,200, so put
I like that one a lot. He was good last year until he got hurt.
Yeah, I think that's a fun pick. I have Gunnar Henderson for Rookie of the Year. NL, I have Ronald Acuna winning MVP. I have Spencer Strider at plus 950 winning NL Cy Young. And then I have Jordan Walker winning Rookie of the Year. Now, quick players to watch. Vlad Guerrero plus 1,200 AL MVP. Alec Manoa plus 800 AL Cy Young. Grayson Rodriguez plus 1,100 for AL MVP. Gosh, those MVP odds would be crazy. Rookie of the Year, National League, Francisco Lindor is plus 2,500.
Got it.
MVP.
On mine, yep.
Zach Gallen is plus 1,100 to win Cy Young. And then Corbin Carroll plus 400. The odds between him and Walker, they're pretty much neck and neck. So those are my picks. I think if you're going to put some money on guys, Vladdy would be an interesting one, even though Shohei obviously is going to win MVP anyway. Lindor would be interesting. Gallen, Grayrod, maybe. You know, there's some good value out there.
Mm-hmm. My long shot value that I like, I sprinkled a couple bucks on Kyle Tucker at plus 2,500 to win MVP. Sneaky good the last couple of years.
Yes.
And then I took Michael Harris II at plus 4,000 to win MVP in the NL. Hunter Green plus 4,000 Cy Young. I think he's just going to strike out the world. The only reason I didn't pick Green or Strider is betting on year two guys.
Yeah, that was tough for me. Yeah.
Huge concern. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that's the only one. And then I think I got it really early. I got plus 5,000, but George Kirby for the Mariners. Yeah. AL Cy Young plus 5. He's plus 3,500 now.
Hey,
plus
man.
Plus 5,000 when I got it.
Joel has a track record now of betting on award winners and actually cashing those tickets. That's something I was unable to do. So.
Mm-hmm. The only differences I have in those, I got Kevin Gausman as a AL Cy Young candidate at plus 1,600. Second best projected K to walk ratio. Aaron Nola at plus 1,200 for NL Cy Young. I like that in the contract year. You talked about Lindor. Kodai Senga for NL Rookie of the Year. Same argument really for the Yoshida pick, but 30 years old, already kind of in his prime. Some of those other guys don't live up to it, but plus 950 is not bad odds. We're a Royals podcast, right, boys?
Yeah.
We are a Royals podcast. How about Bobby Witt Jr., AL MVP, plus 5,000?
Plus 5,000, man.
So what would they, a 30-30 season as shortstop with good defense means hella war.
Yeah,
it's not out of
what record. Possibilities. What record would the team have to have?
That would be the other caveat. They have to be above 500 at least for him to be in the conversation. Because I remember people talking about Adley Rutschman being in the conversation for NL MVP, even outside of AL Rookie of the Year last year. So I think it's going to have to require the Royals to be winning at least on the whole. So that might be the biggest long shot of it, but. If we're talking about long shots here, I like Bobby Witt Jr. plus 5,000. That's definitely a dark horse for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Josh. We do have the man himself, Joel Penfield, back in the fold here. Joel, perfect timing for a transition to division winners, World Series, wild card, all that good stuff.
Yeah, my internet just decided to take a shit on one of my favorite podcasts of the year. So I'm having a great time, guys.
Is it storming outside? Do you have the dish?
No, apparently my Wi-Fi is just from the Stone Age and decided to not work today. So
we can do Wi-Fi talk off air too because I have some thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Division winners and the three wild card teams. So I got the Blue Jays winning the AL East. I have the Guardians running away with the AL Central. That division, the division is so bad, it's awful. Yeah. The AL West, I still got the Astros winning it. My wild cards. Mariners, the Yankees, and the Rays. I have the Rays barely edging out the Angels, which means we don't get Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout in October. Once again. We should all go riot outside of the Angels stadium, letting Artie Moreno know how disappointed we are. And part of the reason why I picked the Rays, I'm not going to step on the rake that everybody does every single year, discounting the Rays. and saying like, oh, they traded this guy. They brought in all these young guys. They're going to be terrible. And then they win 90 games. They're going to keep doing it until the end of time.
Yep.
And I don't think the Yankees are going to be as good because they have two-fifths of a rotation right now. That rotation is not very good. Yep. With Rodon and Montas already on the shelf, you're basically hoping Gerrit Cole and Nestor Cortes can carry you the entire year.
Didn't Seve hurt too?
And Severino, yep, he's hurt too.
Yeah, forever.
National
just an evergreen
side.
Tweet.
Yeah, no kidding. National League side, the Braves in the East, the Cardinals in the Central, and I can't believe I'm doing this, but the Padres in the West. This is finally the year that the Padres actually do it, and the Dodgers finish in second, and the Mets and the Phillies end up as the other two wild cards. If there's ever a year to get the Dodgers, it's this year. The Dodgers are still really good, but they're under the luxury tax the first time in like a decade because they're going to give Shohei Ohtani $600 million next offseason. So this is the year to get him. So you better hope. And with the way the Dodgers have spent all their fake money, all their laundered money, you better hope that they can.
Whoa, that's a serious accusation, Joel.
Okay, where was
hot sauce in your eyes?
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Like it's like that Hannibal Buress thing of why y'all booing me, I'm right.
All right. Speaking of being right, I'm gonna be wrong, by the way. I'm gonna give my predictions. I've got the Yankees somehow still winning the AL East. I think getting Judge back obviously is huge. Adding Carlos Rodon's gonna Rodon. I always struggle with that. There's an accent and
there's a Rondon and a Rodon.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that's why it gets me. Adding him once he's healthy and able to be durable, which I know those are two ifs with him. I think Cleveland does run away with the AL Central. I'm picking the Mariners in the AL West. I think the Altuve injury is going to hurt the Astros a significant amount. I'm going to buy into a World Series hangover narrative, even though I don't necessarily love it. So my wild cards are Toronto. I think they're going to come within a couple games of New York. I could see it going either way. Houston and Tampa. Then out in the NL, I'm going with the Mets with a very close Atlanta as a wild card. I'm going with St. Louis with who the hell knows what's going to happen there. That division just sucks. And then I've got the Padres winning the West. So I've got Philly, LA, and Atlanta as my three wild cards out in the NL.
There is not much deviation happening on my end. Very similar to Joel's, actually, with Blue Jays winning the East, Guardians winning the Central, Astros in the West. Their odds to win their division is -175. Yeah, they've got some. The Mariners are there, the Rangers are there, the Angels are there. That is a gnarly the division, and they're still -175 to win it. That's crazy to me, but whatever. NL side, I got Phillies in the East, Cardinals in the Central at -125. Somehow in that bad division, the Cardinals are still only -125. So that's one thing. And
-400.
Right. Huh. Well, it's weird because, yeah, like you said, the division is absolute poo-poo, and the Cardinals have an okay roster. And if Jordan Walker plays out of his mind, I mean, you got three potential huge bats in that lineup. So it's Cardinals world. We're just living in it anymore. And we're going 3-for-3 in the West, boys. San Diego Padres winning that West this year.
Oh, yeah.
Mark it down. They're +120 to win the West. So that's still pretty solid odds for what we think is going to be it. Wild card teams, AL, basically the same. Yankees, Mariners. I have the Texas Rangers at +180,
I like that,
making the playoffs.
All
in the NL side.
Starts this year are going to be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that payroll. If they don't make the playoffs the next 2 years, Chris Young is immediately fired, correct?
He's got to be, right? Like, if you don't make
it, I think they win 78. Like, they may win 75 games.
They've spent so much money. They have decent guys on the fringe. The young guys.
I think they're going to be good. Well, good is subjective, but I think they're going to be more than fine.
I'll be shocked if they're above 500. I'll put it that way.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I just don't buy it. At least
we're gonna circle back to this.
Okay,
not that they're like the most polarizing team in baseball, but
right. I mean, they're kind of not the most polarizing team. NL side, Braves, Mets, Dodgers. It's basically the same seven teams we're cycling through on that front. So, but yeah, that's what I have as well.
All right. Josh, World Series prediction, go.
We're going to get weird here. I got San Diego Padres over the New York Yankees 4-1.
Ooh, gentlemen sweep by the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel great about my pick. They're both plus 750 to win the World Series. I'm going the New York Yankees over the Atlanta Braves 4-2 in the World Series. I just think it's a complete gut feeling. Like, there's obviously logic for both of those teams to win because their odds are pretty good and they have really, really good rosters. And New York is pretty volatile. Like, they're going to make the playoffs and they're going to be a good team. But, like, they have a lot of guys that may not play a ton of games. They also added one who is a former Kansas City Royal who may not be playing a ton of games. Or was that Boston? What am I talking about?
Who are you talking about?
That was Boston. I was talking about Mondesi. I don't know. It's an AL East.
He's going to be on the last place Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking New York, but I'm leaving that in. Anyway, they do have a lot of guys, not to a Mondesi level, but where you're like, man, I don't know if they're going to stay healthy. I don't know if they're going to be able to hold up over the course of the season, but they also have enough high-end, top-end talent, and they've been spending to where I think New York can get there. And then Atlanta, I just think they're a fun story, and they have the results to match, and they're just a smart org that is doing stuff the right way. They have a guy that some of us are picking to win MVP this year. I think, obviously, in baseball, history has shown that having an MVP-level player doesn't mean you're going to go to the World Series, because the Angels haven't even been able to get to the playoffs with prime Mike Trout at times, but that team has enough, I think, to get there. So the battle of the plus 750s, I think the New York Yankees come out on top.
So I'm picking the Atlanta Braves to win the World Series. American League side, I debated with about four different teams, and I listened to too many national podcasts that made me buy into this. I think the Braves and the Mariners are matching up in the World Series.
Whoa.
And the Braves are going to win it in six games.
I thought you were going to say the Blue Jays at least.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I stepped on the Blue Jays rake last year. I'm not stepping on that one again.
Oh, man.
So I think it's going to be Braves, Mariners, and the Braves win it in six.
All right, guys, we did lose a little bit of Joel. We're having some technical weird stuff happening behind the screen. You can still see him if you're on the video. Just a weird record. Technology is inconsistent, man. And Joel's yelling into his mic, and we cannot hear him, which is honestly kind of funny, just as much as it is unfortunate for our dear pal. So we are going to cut off today's pod here. We thoroughly appreciate everybody jumping in and watching on YouTube, listening via Apple, via Spotify, via wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to KCSN, Kansas City Royals podcasts and coverage there. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the notification bell after you do. Make sure that you are notified when new episodes drop. We'll be back next week with more content reacting to the first handful of days of Royals baseball for 2023. So until then, take care, stay safe. And we will talk to you then.
Let's go, Royals.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all six of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.